Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Max Allen Collins, who is out with a brand new Nolan novel. It's the first one in 33 years. It's called Skim Deep. It's available from this fantastic publisher, Hard Case Crime. And Max, you know, you're one of the most prolific writers in Iowa history. You've written tons of stuff over the years. And this Hard Case Crime, for a novel such as the Nolan character, this label has to have been something as a godsend in your career to come out and get all these books, this hard-boiled detective fiction put out there again for readers of a new generation, right?
You're exactly right. The editor is a guy named Charles Ardai, who was himself a mystery writer, a crime writer. And he approached me when this company began, which was probably, you know, a little bit after the turn of the century, shall we say. And I was approached to have some things reprinted. And he was doing things like Donald E. Westlake and Earl Stanley Gardner and Lawrence Block. And I went along with that and was very excited by the packaging, which is very retro. Looks like something, these look like books you might see on the newsstand in, you know, 1960 or 1955 even. And he came back to me wanting more reprints, and I said, you know, I'd really like to do some new books. I said I'll do some new books for you at the same rate of pay that you were giving me for reprinting old things. And from that came my character Quarry, who had not been around since the mid 80s, generated a movie and a TV show and another 10 or 15 episodes in my own novel series. So it has been an incredible boon to me and an opportunity to write the kind of thing that I most enjoy writing.
Well, you've done so many series. This particular one, Nolan, he's a professional thief, and so this is kind of a bringing you back to this era. Now, from context clues, the story takes place late 80s, early 90s, just because I saw Perfect Strangers was on TV, an episode was on TV, and it might have been a rerun, but I don't know. But does this type of fiction work in a modern era, or do you have to take it back to a pre-cell phone, pre-DNA type of an era?
Well, I think you make a good point. When you're into the whodunit area, and there's often an actual mystery aspect to my crime novels, it's easier to do sort of traditional detective work when you don't have the help of computers and cell phones and so on. And they actually get kind of in the way. They facilitate certain aspects of stories. But I like to go back to turn of the century era. I'm kind of a 20th century guy, and it's something I really enjoy doing. And Nolan harks back to my very first novel that was written when I was at the University of Iowa Writers Workshop, and was published in 1973. So this is a bit of a coda for me for the series, and I just did my Quarry series. I also did a very last book in the series, to kind of tie it all together.
The Quarry series in particular, and then there was the Mallory series about the mystery writer in Iowa solving crimes and stuff. There's a Vietnam era element to that, and both of them were Vietnam veterans, and it really influenced a lot of what they did in their lives. So I know you were at the University of Iowa in probably the early 70s, but that was a tumultuous time there, and I know because my dad was there at the time. So how important was the Vietnam War? And I know you weren't in it, but you were around the ramifications of it here. So how important was that as far as influencing the way that you viewed these characters to write them?
It was absolutely key, and while we're talking now about sort of the retro aspect of some of what I'm doing now, at the time, when I was writing in the early 70s, it was very contemporary, extremely contemporary, and I was trying to bring together the two eras, the era of sort of, I guess you'd say the Humphrey Bogart era with the Lee Marvin era, let's say, there's an element of my own youth culture of the time. The Nolan books in Skim Deep, which is the new book, it deals with the fact that Nolan is a guy, you know, in his early 50s, but his partner in crime has been this young guy in his early 20s. So there's a father and son aspect to this surrogate father and son aspect of this, that prefigured the most famous thing that I did, which is Road to Perdition. So there's been a father-son aspect to these books, and much of what I've written that kind of looks at how these two eras came together, interacted.
Well, that father-son aspect, I know the you have it there, and that it's all prefigures a lot of these things, but I think you've said before that Road to Perdition couldn't have come about until you became a father and understood that relationship. Was that fair to say that it really advanced your understanding of that relationship beyond where it is in the Nolan series?
No question, and while I just pointed out kind of the connection between something like the Nolan book and Road to Perdition, the Nolan series was about somebody who was basically the age I was when I was writing the first book, plus this older man. So that reflected, I guess, that generation gap era that the Vietnam War was a big, big part of. Whereas Road to Perdition is about a much younger kid. So this is a son who is, you know, really, you know, like 11 years old, trying to relate to this very sort of distant father and what the horrible things that happened to them, but bring them together. So, and you know, none of this stuff was calculated by me. I think what happens a lot of times with writers is they really don't know why they're writing certain things. They may have a type of story they like to write or a theme they want to explore. But I look back now and see how much, you know, fathers and sons and even mothers and daughters appear in my books and seem to be something that was in the back of my mind trying to crawl forward.
I'm chatting with Max Allen Collins. His new novel is Skim Deep. It is the first Nolan novel in 33 years, available from the folks at Hard Case Crime. And they're actually republishing all of the Nolan series and tons of other Max's work. And, you know, Max, you talked about the Writer's Workshop, and Delicate Aggression came out a year or two ago. David Dowling put that book together. And he mentioned in the book, and I remember reading this, that there's this whole idea at the Writer's Workshop of really a resistance to the basically the way that people sell their works and things like that, commercialization aspect of writing. And I know that that's an observation he's made as an outsider years later. Did you have that sense when you were there that there was a resistance to a commercialization of writing?
I was definitely a black sheep. I was the only person that was writing overtly commercial fiction. And I wasn't trying to write commercial fiction. It just I was drawn to that kind of material. I was drawn to Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, James M. Cain, Mickey Spillane, and there's a story that has to do with how I got into the workshop, and that is that I went up to see Richard Yates, the great mainstream writer who wrote Revolutionary Road, and I went to found his office before in the summer before school began, and I came in all bubbling with enthusiasm, and I dropped a novel off to him to read, trying to get into the workshop, and I came away devastated because he said, "We don't do this kind of thing here." "I'll look at this," he said, "but we don't do this kind of thing here." And then I went home and I was just devastated. And to my wife Barb, I said, "I've thought about going to the University of Iowa for you know as long as I can remember because I live in Muscatine, and it's just." Iowa City's just 35 miles away. And I knew Kurt Vonnegut was up there, and I knew, you know, it was devastating to me to not get to do that. And about a week later, I got a phone call from Yates apologizing to me, saying, "No, and basically saying, "You're a real writer. I'm sorry that I was essentially prejudiced against you. Said you're writing on a level that nobody else is writing at, where the entries for this year were concerned for the undergraduate workshop, and so he brought me in and he became my mentor. He got me my first agent. So the year I graduated the graduate school, I was the only person really who sold. I think there's one other person who sold anything. Out of the entire workshop, and attitudes toward me changed a little bit when I became a working writer amongst the other students.
Well, at the time, you know, you've got these books and you're writing them and you're selling them. So really, was the workshop for you more of making connections, that type of thing, or did it improve your writing?
Well, it certainly improved my writing working with somebody like Richie Yates. And there were that's the thing about the workshop. You have two things happen. You're working with the instructors are published, experienced writers, and so that's always a good thing to brush against. And then you have a kind of an opportunity to see how your work, because it is a workshop, the other students look at what you're doing, and you've got to learn to deal with criticism, and some of it helps you, and some of it you realize as well, not everybody's going to like what I'm doing. So it's an instructive, it's a great workshop, it really, really is.
And then, of course, you did the Dick Tracy comic strip for so many years, and then we're working with Mickey Spillane, and that relationship between Mickey Spillane and you always fascinated me, because here's a guy who's a fellow that every one of us that read his stuff thought that he was this hard-boiled, almost a street thug type of a guy, and from all accounts, Stacy Keach on down, they've talked about what a street sweetheart the man was, but for him to take somebody under your wing, do you ever think about that now, as you're at the age that you were working with Mickey Spillane, that, you know, somebody's going to take over some of my characters when I'm gone, or maybe they will, maybe they won't, I don't know, but you ever think that could happen on your end?
You know, I really haven't thought about that. In fact, I'm probably motivated in the opposite direction, and I say that because Mickey, for various reasons, and we won't go into them because there's too many, but he had a lot of projects that he started and didn't finish. And I became kind of the literary executor, and he asked me before his passing to do this, to basically complete the things in his files. I mean, I've completed something like 16 Spillane novels that he began in one form or another, sometimes a really substantial manuscript and sometimes just an outline. But I became his posthumous collaborator. Now, me, on the other hand, I work very, very hard to get everything I've worked on out there. So when they go to my drawer when I'm gone, there won't be much there. Everything got out. My attitude is I don't write this stuff not to be read. I want to get it out there, and it's the only way it generates income for me, because this is. I often say that my career has been really dedicated to finding a way for me to not have to get a real job. It's an avoidance of actual work.
Well, sometimes I read the works that you've done, and I think, do you ever start something and say, oh, this sucks, and you scrap it? Because with the sheer number of novels that you've published and stories, and in fact, you have one in the recent Ellery Queen magazine that I just read that was a Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. Yeah. It was a fantastic story. But do you write stuff that you just scrap? Because it seems like you wouldn't have time to do that because you're putting out so much.
I can't really think of. I'd have to go back to when I was in. You know, maybe at the workshop there were a couple things I started that did not pan out. But I pretty much. The only thing I would say is now and then, very rarely, I may write a chapter and think it doesn't work. I think I've gone in the wrong direction in a story and set it aside. But I'm pretty focused. My approach, which it's taken a while to develop, is to outline pretty specifically where I'm going, but have it be loose enough that I can make discoveries along the way. I often liken it to having a road map, but when you're driving coast to coast, you've got to have it loose enough so that if you see that sign that says "World's Biggest Ball of String, Next Left," you got to be able to take that left. And go check out the world's biggest ball of string, and then get back on the road. So it's a combination of a controlled narrative, but also loose enough that some sort of improvisation can happen along the way.
So I know Hard Case Crime is putting out a lot of your stuff. In fact, going forward, there's a few releases. In fact, there was one this week, right?
Yes, a Double Down, I think, is coming out. Okay. That's the very first book I did, Bait Money, and its sequel, Blood Money. I should say all of these Hard Case Crimes, other than Skim Deep, are two books to a book, so that we could get them out there relatively quickly. So they're actually kind of a good buy. I mean, these are fat books that are two not fat books put together.
And they got the great artwork, and they're easy to carry around because they're little paperbacks, right?
Yeah, they're physically a little bit bigger than the old paperbacks that I grew up with. They're considered trade paperbacks, but what's nice about them is they're still compact enough to, you know, stick in a back pocket. But those covers you mentioned, those are given a better display area. And one of the things that got me going with Hard Case Crime was when they asked me to do, when I started talking to the editor about doing something new as opposed to a reprint, I said, I'll do one, but I want a cover by Robert McGinnis, because Robert McGinnis was the, and he's still alive, he's in his 90s, Robert McGinnis was like the premier, illustrator of these kind of crazy retro covers of Guns and Girls, but beautiful women. And he had done many of the James Bond posters, movie posters, with Sean Connery. I mean, this is a hugely influential illustrator in the history of American illustration. And Charles, who is, as I said, is also a writer, he'd had a McGinnis cover himself. And I said, well, you want me to come on board? Give me one of those McGinnis covers. And now I got one for a book called The Last Quarry. And now I've had more McGinnis covers than anybody working today.
Just it's so amazing to me what is important to writers. You've done so much, and yet the one thing you want them is a McGinnis cover, right?
Well, yeah, I've been very unhappy with my covers generally over the years because I had a very, very early on when I was at the workshop, and Richard Yates approached an agent. And this agent who was well known and was kind of a grizzled character. He had been the editor at Gold Medal Books, which was the paperback company that did a lot of the things like Jim Thompson and so on. And he looked at my first novel, Bay Money, and he said, "This I'm afraid this young man is a blacksmith in an automotive age." And that's really kind of it. I mean, I am a blacksmith in automotive age. I mean, I'm still writing a kind of book, but I hope in a modern way that people like Hammett and Chandler, not that I'm in their class, but that was what I fell in love with when I was, 13, 14 years old. And it's I've done that way. A lot of what impacted me in when I was in junior high and high school has stayed with me. You know, I still play rock and roll, for example, and we still play '60s music. So I guess I'm still trying to get out of high school.
And you've never left Muscatine. You've done this all from the confines of your hometown.
I have. It's nicely central. I can go east. I can go west.
And you can write anywhere. So, all right, this book, I really enjoyed this new Nolan book. It's called Skim Deep. It's available now from Hard Case Crime. He's Max Allen Collins. Check out whatever he's written because there's just tons of it out there. Max, just a fantastic book here, and thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you. It's funny, too, isn't it?
It's incredibly funny. There's some great lines on there that I often wonder, wow, that was quite an observation.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks, Max.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.